Hi, it's Amy Siskin of The Weekly List and author of the book The List, and welcome to episode 132 of The Weekly List Podcast, which is part of a new section, Returning to Normalcy, which will cover our trail back to normal as well as important historical events. Welcome. We are now 2 months out from Biden being inaugurated. It's hard to put into words how different the country feels. The news cycle has returned to normal. No longer do we wake up to a flurry of who knows what pronouncements, racism, corruption, kleptocracy, and all the rest that we had to wake up to for 4 years. Now we're back to scandals like Biden's German shepherds having to leave the White House because one snapped at a security official. We're back to the level of Obama's tan suits and Dan Quayle misspelling potato as the things that will catch our attention for days, which in the era of Trump would not even have been a blip. So we don't have to worry about waking up every morning. We don't have to worry about checking our phones. I'm noticing people, including myself, saying they're watching less cable TV and starting to read more books. I've actually started to read fiction for the first time since this nightmare started and been able to enjoy it. And I think that's pretty widely held from what I'm understanding. About a quarter of our country at this point has received a first vaccine. About 1 in 6 Americans are fully vaccinated. We are once again a world leader. And for the first time since Trump took office, I see people that I'm friends with in Canada or in Europe expressing a level of jealousy as opposed to an expression of pity that we had been receiving for the last 4 years. We have a long way to go to repair the damage done and a long way to go in our country's journey to a more perfect union, but we are certainly headed back in the right direction. How we are viewed in the world, our normal alliances, all of these things are starting to take shape in 2 months in. Biden had set a goal of having 100 million shots in arms in the first 100 days and met that goal in 58 days. So, again, it's hard to put into words how different the country feels. There's also expression of compassion and empathy coming from our country's leader, which was absent for the past 4 years. In fact, it was the opposite. We're going to start off with one of these stories or one of the aspects that came as a result of what had been just overt racism from the not only Trump, which is a word you hear less and less. He's now referred to as the former guy. It's shocking still how quickly he's in a way become erased. Even saying the word Trump feels kind of strange at this point, but not only Trump, but his entire regime and senior members of the Republican Party had been involved and complicit in this racism. And we're going to talk first about Asian American violence. But before I get to that, I just want to back up a little, and this goes into the normal news cycle. Without Trump being on social media, he has somewhat disappeared. Once in a while, you get a statement from him that the media will cover. But it's hard to put into words again how absent he is, other than in terms of comparisons. You don't hear about him. You don't see him, which is normal for ex-presidents, but not, I'm sure, what he had in mind. I think the loss of the social media has been a dramatic change for him. As well as we're going to talk this week about lawsuits, I assume are taking up a fair amount of his time. But we're still living in this alternative reality versus reality. There are still large portions of our country who don't believe Biden is a real president, who still believe that there's going to be this day of reckoning when Trump will be president and be reinstalled because of the deep state. And if you're watching Fox News and you're watching that ecosystem, it's like you're being shown a completely different set of facts than is what is reality. So let's start off with Asian American violence, which we covered extensively in this list, Trump's use of the term China virus or Kung flu or China or all the other variations that he used. And it wasn't only Trump, and he said this hundreds of times, trying to put the blame on China, rightfully or wrongfully, for the virus, but take no responsibility for the hundreds of thousands of Americans dying under his watch. More than 500,000 died. Not only Trump, but Pompeo, his Secretary of State, Kevin McCarthy, still in his tweets, will tweet about the China virus. So, what did we think was going to happen when this kind of thing happens? Day in, day out to his devoted followers. Well, of course, we've seen a huge increase in anti-Asian racist incidents. There's been 3,800 since he started this, this branding to try to deflect blame for the incompetence and inadequacy of our response. We've gone from being one in four cases and one in four deaths in the world, although we were only 4% of the population, to now under Biden being a leader in the world and getting vaccinated. But trip down memory lane, we were in very bad straits. And since then, since that blame, again, 3,800 anti-Asian incidents, nearly 70% of which were against Asian women. This week, a heinous attack by a 21-year-old white man in Atlanta. A mass shooting spree, killing eight, six of which were Asian women, at massage parlors. And although it isn't overtly called a hate crime yet, you can see where this is all coming from. This continuing, and it continues if you watch Fox News, the problem is China. And it's not anyone's doubt that China is a threat to the United States as a world power. No one is disputing that. But we are back to an era of, as Biden well put it, scapegoating Americans, in this case, Asian Americans, in a way that many of us have not seen in our lifetime. So maybe the worst case of it since what we, the shameful episode under FDR with the Japanese internment camps. And we read week after week, day after day, of attacks around the country. Based on pure ignorance and started as and continued through Trump and the Republican leaderships. In terms of other news this week, the last few weeks, the US intelligence report came out this week on the 2020 election. And that's also, if you'll recall, Attorney General William Barr, Pompeo, DNI. The DNI that Trump had, Grinnell and others, and blamed everything on China. It was China that was trying to interfere. That was on Fox News. They were trying to interfere in the US election. That turns out to be false. Surprise to nobody. China did not attempt to interfere in the 2020 election, but US intelligence finds the Russian government did meddle with an influence campaign. With a specific aim to denigrate Biden and support Trump, similar to what they did in 2016. This time it was fortunately less successful. But in addition to those particular goals, they also sought to undermine public confidence in the election process, along with Trump. Trump did that too, and to exacerbate sociopolitical divisions in the United States. So we have to remember. Russia is not our friend. Russia helped install Trump and try to install him again. There is elements in this report without naming names that seem to implicate Rudy Giuliani as being complicit in spreading Russian propaganda, which we've also talked about. So, lessons learned, I guess, from 2016, Russia was not as impactful in our election, but they tried. Biden spoke out. Biden said there will be consequences. How dramatically different that feels than Donald Trump, who said, I trust Putin over US intelligence. How dramatically different. Biden also called Putin this week a killer. Said that out loud, which seemed to shock Putin, who has had nothing but admiration from our U.S. leader for the past 4 years. I compared it to Biden taking the alpha position because Putin was very much reactive to being called a killer versus 4 years of him having Trump on a leash and the U.S. interests on a leash under Trump. Dramatic difference. So we will see how that plays out. But geopolitically, we are more aligned with our traditional allies and no longer defending what Russia is doing, including human rights violations, which is a dramatic shift from what we've been living under. Also this week, Senator Whitehouse, Sheldon Whitehouse, said that the FBI did not complete a proper investigation of Brett Kavanaugh in 2018 when he was being considered for the Supreme Court and had allegations of sexual assault against him, calling the report fake and asking the newly appointed and confirmed Attorney General Merrick Garland to look into it. Some perspective for what our project is here in the weekly list. Let's remember that Marcia Gessen, who is one of the experts in authoritarianism that I cited as I started out this project, had specifically warned that one of the things that authoritarians do is undermine the court system by installing extremists or people that are not viewed in a way that is credible. She had warned about that before it happened. And the second Supreme Court nominee that Trump pushed through after the, some might say, stolen seat from Merrick Garland, our new attorney general, that went to a Trump appointee. What happened with Kavanaugh very much undermined trust in the Supreme Court. We have Kavanaugh now. We have Justice Clarence Thomas, who are accused of sexual assault, sitting on the bench in the U.S. Supreme Court. So that is something, a tool of authoritarianism, and we still have yet to see how that all plays out. But we're opening another door to examine whether that was properly conducted. Also out this week, on the insurrection on January 6, the Washington Post has obtained an internal memo from the U.S. Army, which said that the Army initially pushed back to deny a modest request by the D.C. government for National Guard help on January 6. We're still learning more about the insurrection. So that brings into question, if you'll recall on our podcast, shortly after the election, Esper stepped down as defense secretary. We had a new defense secretary come in who had not as strong credentials. Not that Esper had great credentials either. We have to remember the former guy, as time went on, you know, each person that he picked was progressively less and less qualified. Very few of them were actually even confirmed. But notably, the Army and the Defense Secretary, we're learning more and more as the weeks go by, seem to not be interested in having backup despite all the threats. And these were threats that were sent around in reports, but you didn't even need an internal government report. You could pick up the Washington Post. It reported extensively on potential threats coming on January 6. 2 days before, the leader of the far-right extremist group, the Proud Boys, which have been now classified in Canada to be domestic terrorists, their leader had been arrested. And now we've subsequently learned that 4 state leaders have been charged now in, quote, conspiracy, for conspiracy. And we know now that they were worried that their leader, Tarrio, was perhaps cooperating or was otherwise compromised, and they communicated with one another separately in a different, using telegraph as opposed to how they were communicating. And we know that they were part of a conspiracy to plan this insurrection. Separately, the Oath Keepers, another far-right group, similarly have been charged with conspiracy. So you start to get a sense that there was a real effort to overthrow, and it's getting closer and closer to the White House, Trump's White House. Remember in the debate when Trump said, stand back and stand by to the Proud Boys. Well, they seem to have listened. 9 in 10 Americans would like to have our FBI prosecute the Capitol rioters. 9 in 10. It's hard to imagine in this divided country we live in to have that kind of unanimity on much anything. But 69% think it's very important that we do that, and another 18% say somewhat important. So the country is pushing for that. You know, other things that have happened as we return back to normal. You'll remember Alexander Vindman, who testified in the first impeachment and then subsequently was pushed out by Trump. Army Lieutenant Colonel Yevgeny Vindman, who is his twin brother, has been put up for a promotion, as have several women generals whose promotion was held up because the Army did not believe Trump would push for them. So there are elements, you know, just it's surprising to me how many fronts the Biden administration is covering in addition to what we opened up with the vaccine and the competency and the changing world order. Just filling in the little minutiae like that from my list. Not that it's minutiae, but these are important points. And it just goes to contrast that if we had left it to Trump, even if we had the vaccines, there was no plan to distribute them. They don't magically go into people's arms. There was no ramped up production. There was no plan. Everybody was kind of left on their own, and our federal government was doing nothing. Now our federal government is engaged. And you see another sharp contrast with Democrats who control the Senate and the House just barely on both fronts, pushing through a $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief bill through reconciliation without any Republicans voting for it, despite, you know, us going through the tough part of this coronavirus, many Americans being unemployed, tens of millions starving or under threat of eviction. That passed without any Republicans. And the Republicans are still in this sort of disarray with Trump pulling them one way and these sort of crazy Trump people and mainstream Republicans not being able to take back their party. So they seem to be in this sort of no man's land of voting against. 12 House Republicans voted against something as simple as awarding Capitol Police gold medals for their role in the insurrection because people like Representative Gohmert didn't want to recognize and put into the history books that the insurrection that January 6th actually happened. So the other part of all of what's happening, this, as we talked about in the beginning of the podcast, the reality versus the alternative reality, that continues. And it really is providing, for me and for the country, the importance of this project, of the weekly list, that Republicans will not be able to rewrite history, which they are currently trying to do. Say the insurrection didn't happen. Russian interference didn't happen. Yes, these things did happen. We now have a government that is functioning, and these things did happen. And the weekly list will, in great detail, lay out the case for future historians writing about this period of time of what actually happened. So as we close out, I want to go through also the lawsuits and John Dean from the Nixon era said this week that it's just a matter of time before Trump is indicted in New York. Vanity Fair had compiled that there are a total of 29 lawsuits now pending against Trump, some from his former life, but many others. There's the cases we've been talking about, Letitia James, Attorney General Letitia James of New York. Cy Vance has, Manhattan DA Cy Vance has an extensive investigation going on and has his tax returns now. He has interviewed Michael Cohen, I believe now 8 times, and also Jennifer Weisselberg, the ex-daughter-in-law of Trump's CFO, is also cooperating. So those are speeding along as are two defamations as a result of sexual assault by Trump, E. Jean Carroll and Summer Zervos. And then we have 3 cases against Trump opening about his trying to overturn the 2020 election, as well as a criminal investigation by the D.C. Attorney General over the insurrection and other lawsuits that we've covered relating to the insurrection. And interestingly to note, Trump has problems getting attorneys now. We noted that during the second impeachment trial, the quality was, how do we nicely say it? Not great. That is the nicest you could say it. He had a personal injury attorney representing him and basically screaming. So the nature of who he's going to be able to have to defend him in these 29 lawsuits, lesser quality. Some lawyers who had been representing him on the 18 cases that relate to things about his properties, the bed bugs at the Doral and other things that precede his time in office, those lawyers have quit. So that might be why we are seeing a lot less of the former guy and hearing a lot less of him. And ironically, part of Mar-a-Lago had to be shut down this week because of a COVID spread. And we all feel for the workers there that are exposed, that are not Trump's members. But, you know, these kind of things are happening. It's reality is hitting. So, again, just noting in 2 months how dramatically different things feel. And closing out with the concept of people saying that they're sleeping at night again. That to me, that and people reading fiction and the news cycle back to normal, to me, is the most shocking of all. And I think we're recovering from all of this in the midst of a pandemic. So you don't exactly hit the ground running. We're all still waiting to get our vaccines. 3/4 of us are. Things are slowly getting back to normal. But the feeling of competence, the feeling of our government doing its job, being there for the people, of Biden being the right person for this time, just feels so incredibly different from the anxiety and the PTSD that we are all suffering from the 4 years of the former guy. Signing off, stay well, stay safe until you can get your vaccine, and keep your mask on. Until next week.